Lilio, and welcome to In These Times, the 2019 autumn reading. My name's Eric, and I'm here to hang out with you and your astrology for a little while in these times when it just seems like everybody's going through something, and where there are ways to suss out what that looks like and see what the underlying information and the underlying creative opportunities are about. I'm beginning all of these readings with one thought from the pen of Kartha Rinpoche, a Tibetan Lama, Kenpo Kartha Rinpoche, from a book called Bardo, Interval of Possibility. And I was particularly moved by this thought in a time when I was, let's just say, deeply in need of some spiritual refreshment and wondering, like, what the holy heck this is all about with the world in the state that it's in, and can any of us really do anything that will help? And, you know, so anyway, this is what I found up at the DK Tibetan Monastery in Woodstock, home of the Karmapa. Kartha says, I mention all of this and comment on this at length because it's important to understand that as bad as the times are, the Dharma is not affected or diminished in any way. We do indeed live in an age of decadence, but the Dharma is not decadent. The Dharma is the same as it's always been. The land of Tibet has suffered greatly throughout the preceding century, and yet all that has happened there, all that has brought great suffering to the people and has greatly diminished practice resources, has not affected the power or the authenticity of the Dharma in any way. The compassion of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and their blessings are utterly unaffected by the circumstances of the times we live in. The Dharma is always effective, and it will always work. You simply have to do it. What is meant by Dharma is acting as if to hold the world together. So Dharma is any action that you take and any frame of mind leading to that action that is about weaving the integrity of the world rather than ripping at the integrity of the world. And the grievous thing that we see all the time is the tearing away at the integrity of the world. This is true in speech as much as it is in action. Donald Trump producing a fake hurricane map claiming that a hurricane that is headed for, well, the Northeast is actually headed for Alabama is adharmic. It rips at the integrity of truth. It rips at people's trust, and you do not need to look far to find examples of this. And so the calling that we all have now in these times of breakdown and decay and decadence is to act as if to hold the world together. And therefore, all of our actions need to be taken on the level of the Dharma. And what Rinpoche means by the Dharma is the central teaching by example of acting as if to hold the world together. So this is teaching by example. I can say the words, but my example is the thing that you will remember. Anyone can say any words, but what you remember is their action, and what people remember about you is what they see you do. And Leo is in this unusual position of being at the center of things. It almost always happens this way, at the center of things. this is a metaphor of the sun being the ruling body of Leo, like Mercury rules Virgo and Venus rules Libra. Well, the ruling body of Leo is quite distinctive because it's an actual star. I know astrology thinks of itself as being study of the stars, but the reality is most of what we astrologers study is planets. And you are ruled by a star. That star is the sun. It is the source of much of the energy that we have. There are lots of different ways to slice and dice the history of the solar system and to figure out why Pluto has so much heat. Clearly, that's not coming from the sun, but every bite of food that we eat and going outside into the glorious sunshine and tapping into natural energy in any way, it's coming from the sun. And that's you. You are in this challenging position of being at the center of and having the primary responsibility of holding things together. And so the essence of your life is dharmic. If astrology is the metaphor, you would know from context, if astrology is the metaphor, your role is to be a practitioner and a teacher of the Dharma. And you do this by example. Your astrology is under all kinds of intriguing and exciting movements. There are new outer planets that have taken up their position in your chart, meaning that they are affecting the fixed cross of the zodiac, and there's a new one in your sign. I'll get to that in a moment. But the main thing that's going on is a conjunction in your sixth house. And the sixth is, it's one of those really unusual houses in astrology that today talks about work and well-being. So that's the way that most people experience the sixth. We really need to go from reality back into theory rather than from theory into attempting to make the world fit the astrology. And so when most people, how do we say this? There is a region of the chart called the sixth house. You have Capricorn there. It's six signs away from Leo, whether you're Leo sun or Leo rising, or we're referencing a question associated with Leo. Leo moon would be included, but particularly sun and rising. Six places away is Capricorn. And in the sixth place, we're in this region of work and well-being. And the next layer down from that is service. There's a service orientation of the sixth. The service orientation derives from the ancient meaning of this house, which is about the military. So this is where the service piece comes. And then as society changes and as astrologers' perception of charts changes and as we match things up more carefully, we've evolved through the sixth into, military service, into all forms of service. All forms of service often include medicine, logistical support, all of which fit the description of military service, and then all forms of work, and then from the medical theme, well-being, taking care of yourself, day-to-day reality, is the sixth house. And it's the day-to-day reality of how you feel and the work that you do and the ways in which you do or don't take care of yourself. And so in the chart that I'm looking at, this kind of metaphorical chart that references all things Leo, the real power in the sky the tectonic movement, the release of energy from the earth, the thing that's moving and shaking and quaking currently is Capricorn. And this is due to the conjunction of Saturn and Pluto. Conjunction of Saturn and Pluto is one of those things that happens about 3 times per century. And all contacts of Saturn and Pluto, particularly the conjunction, which we're now experiencing, and the opposition, change things and open up new territory, and they open up new eras in history. So there's a lot of ways to define an era astrologically, but often what ends up being called an era historically by people who don't know astrology can be traced back to events at the time of a Saturn-Pluto alignment. And these are often fearful developments. There's often a contraction of consciousness at the time of a Saturn-Pluto event. So normally, typically, humans do not respond with an enlightened perspective on Saturn-Pluto events. They break out the duct tape and the plastic bags like we were doing at the last major Saturn-Pluto event, which was September 11th, 2001. Or they evolve strange materialistic philosophies where every man for himself becomes the national religion, and compassionate conservatism means throwing a lot of people in jail, beginning at the time of the Saturn-Pluto conjunction the last time around in 1982. And so now we're back at the next Saturn-Pluto conjunction, and we're at one of these moments where how we respond is up for grabs. How we respond to the changes happening now is up for grabs. And whether we think there can be any influence coming from us, even whether anyone thinks they're capable of having any serious influence over their own life, is up for grabs. And as you probably know, there are quite a few people in profound despair who don't really believe they can change the world enough just to change their own circumstances of their own reality. You, however, don't have the luxury of debating this point because your circumstances and your reality are changing. And so what I suggest you do is go through an inventory of all things related to the sixth house and put that all in the style of Capricorn and then do an assessment. So I'll go through a few of them for you. First of all, the alignment of Capricorn with the sixth is the kind of imagery of you're doing the highest level of organizational and administrative work at a much lower pay grade. So you don't get to necessarily have, I hope you do, if you want it, the corner office and the dining room and the meals and all of that, like they might have up in the executive suite. But you can easily be handed the difficult work, the dirty work, the ultimate responsibility to be the one who stays till 11 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning and make sure the damn thing gets done, because you just have this feeling that if you don't, nobody else will. And this metaphor can reach into any phase of your life, any aspect, any other region of your life, because it is a primary orientation. You have a very strong orientation around Saturn. And that's what this is about, having Capricorn on the 6th and Aquarius in the 7th. And right now, the 9/10 of the long-term big changes, big astrology energy is coming through Capricorn. So this is suggesting, first of all, an assessment of your work situation and whether it's actually serving you and whether you feel that you are serving something that is worth your precious life force energy and your precious time and your creativity, your credibility, and your leadership. The other really significant thing that the sixth involves is matters of health. So whatever may be the early origins of the sixth house, way back in there, astrologers were using the sixth as a reference point to health. And this is health on the holistic level is the sixth, and additionally on a kind of a structural level where the things to be the most mindful of for anyone with a Leo orientation are, first of all, bones and skin, the Saturn types of containment, but also any system that supports the whole. And so really, though, if you stick to paying attention to your bones and your skin, you've covered at least a leading indicator of health for you. So you want to be paying attention to that. Additionally, the quality of the space in which you work is crucial to pay attention to, because the quality of the space in which you work will heavily influence your state of mind in that space and your overall state of health. And the thing about having Capricorn here is that you may be, let's say, a little too accepting of Spartan conditions, and you may need a little more sunshine and clean, like a clean, sunny environment. I like the old short story, a clean, well-lighted place. I think that's a Hemingway story. Rather than what can tend to happen, which is something that's utilitarian, a little bit dry, and particularly if you either work in your own space or you're working in someone else's space, but you're sensitive, it's crucial that you do what you can to take over the space and to be mindful of all of the different influences and impacts that it's having on you. Is the air clean? The air coming out of the vents, is the air clean? Is there enough light? Are there plants? Does it work structurally? Does your chair support your back, for example? Is your desk structurally comfortable enough to work at? This would be reason enough to change jobs if it weren't. If you were not actually supported, if you didn't feel that your spine was supported and you can't get a chair, you can either buy a chair and bring it to work or insist on some change. But ultimately, if it's not forthcoming, this is a good reason to go someplace else, because you need your work environment to support your health. Good Lord knows you do enough to support your work environment. So I would offer that. And then the second is all matters of health generally. Are you taking care of yourself? Do you have your basic needs covered? Again, that quality of Capricorn can be a bit Spartan. And so you want to make sure that you're a little more lavish and generous in the self-care department. So this is where the kind of epicenter of your astrology is. And this ties into something else, actually, a few interesting places, which we'll talk about in the next segment. there is an aspect to well-being that is often given more kind of ass-kissy lip service than true devotion. That is the spiritual life. One of the things that makes Leo what it is that you have an intuitive understanding that self, the idea of self, and the whole notion of a being's existence orients around the self and the self concept. This is an idea that would fit well with a number of different of the more effective therapy teachings, such as Gestalt therapy, where your experience is the thing to pay attention to and to work with. It doesn't mean that your life is only about you, but what it means is that unless you're able to get yourself to the center of your own being and establish your own bond with the universe, your own connection to creation, you don't really have much to work with. And so this, by the way, is in my reading about having Aries as the ninth place from Leo. So Aries is your fellow fire sign. You're going to resonate with it naturally. The ninth place is about all things that you might call higher. For example, this thing called the higher self, meaning the true self, I guess, the higher courts, higher education, great libraries, and then all things exotic and remote, removed, and distant all come in through the ninth house. And the ninth house, for many people, is often taken in a way that is abstract, as if somehow you might have one spiritual philosophy, and then it's okay if you're, you know, in business and your business calls for you to fuck everybody over, but then, you know, on Sunday you're spiritual, or you go to the retreat and you're a good person. This is not you. This fragmentation of your integrity, first of all, is not naturally who you are. But second, if it happens to have an impact on you, can be extremely dangerous to you. And so the thing you want is the integrity of who you are throughout all of your circumstances. And that integrity of who you are as you shift from person to person, circumstance to circumstance, challenge to challenge, desire to desire, whatever, as you move through the different facets and phases of your life to keep bringing a certain internal sameness, a consistency, the unchanging Dharma to all of them. And through this process, you are on what could be honestly and fairly called a spiritual path, because it is about the integrity of who you are, not the image, not the concept, not the thought form, not something you identify with, but something on a much deeper level. And that much deeper level can be frightening, because for those who have lived their lives on the outside or have lived their lives through a process of calling themselves something, or you know the kind of person who can convert religions. Like, this is something I just don't understand. Is that converting religions really, like, you know, anything prefabricated really can be that, you know, consistent with someone's internal reality? Well, this is not your thing. Your religion is the absolute and utter sincerity of your being. This is now being called into focus by Chiron. There's more going on than just Chiron, but this is really one of the most significant outer planet changes that you have gone through in the past couple of years, and it may have arrived with an activation of many things that we consider part of the ninth house, including pursuit of your spiritual growth, the desire to learn more, the desire to learn more about yourself, the desire to travel, and to have something that we don't normally get these days, which is direct experience. Everything has a virtual tour, but, you know, the land does not work that way. Architecture does not work that way. And there's no way that the Epcot Center version of Paris can give you the movable feast that Paris itself will bestow if you just stay there for a little while. And so for you, the lines from Adrian Rich come to mind. The wreck and not the story of the wreck. She's going scuba diving and she wants to get to the wreck and not the story of the wreck. The thing itself and not the myth. And so you are on a quest for, owing to Chiron and my reading of Chiron, the wreck and not the story of the wreck. The thing itself and not the myth. And so the wreck is what was damaged in the past. The wreck is the thing at the center that is calling forth the need for the healing journey. And the thing itself and not the myth is being understanding of the way in which stories, all these stories, I'm seeing the word kind of finally go out of being so trending, but for years, this thing about story was just trending, and everything's like, what's your story? Tell your story. Tell my story. This is my story. Tell your still Facebook is asking me to tell more of my story. Story, story, story. Story is usually a line of bullshit. Story is usually a made-up thing. And so you want to go beyond all of the stories you've been told about yourself, stories you told yourself about yourself, the personal mythology that you built up, and go for the thing itself and not the myth. Now, also newly in the fire signs is a planet that has entered your sign, and that is Varuna. Varuna, in its day, it was discovered in 2000, was considered a major discovery in the Kuiper Belt. One of the very early discoveries in the Kuiper Belt, so it's a Pluto-like planet with an approximately 290-year orbit. Don't quote me on the number, but it's somewhere right in that range, so that means it's kind of one ring out from Pluto. And it was thought so highly of by astronomers that they gave it an honorific minor planet number, 20,000 Varuna, so nobody could forget it. In 2000, 20,000 Varuna was discovered. Just to give you an idea, Pluto was supposed to get 10,000 Pluto. It's now 136340 Pluto because whoever job it was missed the opportunity. So Varuna got 20,000 Varuna, so you can get an idea of where this fits the history of astronomy. This planet was discovered in Cancer, and now it is more than 18 years later, ventured into Leo. And what Varuna does is level the ground. Varuna levels out potential. And that means where there are those who are a little too high and mighty can be brought down, and those who are living below their station, their level of responsibility, their level of personal dignity can be brought up. But generally speaking, Varuna carries the energy of leveling the playing field. And I suggest that with Varuna in your sign, it's going to be in your sign for the foreseeable future. Like, I don't know, another 20 years. I could look it up, but we're talking about that kind of length of time. A Pluto-like transit. That you be sensitive to when the ground is not level. And that you run almost any important question through the concept of, is the ground level? What is going on here? Where is this advantage that this other person seems to have coming from? And then what can you do about it? And the thing that I would propose here with Varuna is that there is always going to be something that you can do about it. There's always going to be a way that you can, once you're aware that the ground is not level, or the goalpost is moving in the direction of the other team, or whatever it might be, that Varuna is a constant reminder to be observant of the way in which the environment favors or does not favor you, and then very quickly go to the level of what you may do to level things out. Now, while that's going on, there is a kind of a profound teaching coming out of your adjoining sign, Virgo. Virgo is the second place of Leo, and so it's a direct extension of Leo. So the signs that surround any one sign, right? Any sign in question, right? A rising sign, a sun sign, the one right before it and the one right after it can contain germane messages that do really need to be taken into account. And the second house is the house of one's values and priorities. Its history is that it starts as the house of your, like, cow and your pots and pans, the tools of your trade, your available cash, your gifts and talents and abilities, your quote-unquote self-esteem, which is about really self-respect. And all of these in your chart, solar chart, or whole sign, rising sign chart, if you're Leo rising, are described by Virgo. And what Virgo describes here, first of all, is a tendency to be quite harsh toward yourself, to have internalized a very high degree of self-criticism from somewhere. And so it would be helpful if you were to bring some compassion to that and to hold yourself to human standards and to also surrender any artificial or abstract notion of purity or perfection. You just don't need it, and it doesn't exist. Even in chemistry, it's very hard to get a substance, you know, pure down to like the parts per million or the parts per billion level. There's always going to be something in there, you know, including like dirt from the beaker or whatever it might be. And the universe operates under the law of diffusion, where things are constantly moving from areas of greater concentration to areas of lesser concentration. So there's constant infiltration. Now, you have to be aware of this infiltration. But on the other side of that, it's important that you be aware that there is not purity. And that also means purity of your intentions. It means purity of your whole being. But what you can do, and what the second house is calling on you to do, is to prioritize, to know what matters, to act upon what you have determined is the most relevant. And so there is most certainly, with all of the Virgo astrology coming through right now, in this very unusual moment of this grand conjunction happening in Virgo, beginning with the new moon at the beginning of Virgo's run, the sun's run through Virgo, and now with the sun and Venus, Mercury, Mars, Juno, all being present in Virgo, are saying, study your own priorities, know what's important, and have a basis for determining what is important. One of the things, of course, Miracles talks about in a chapter in the Manual for Teachers associated with the cultivation of trust, and the steps on the way to cultivating trust include a series of phases that teachers go through on the way to becoming kind of accredited as teachers. And one of them is the period of sorting out. And one of the central lessons of the period of sorting out is evaluating everything on the basis of whether it is helpful or harmful. And part of A Course in Miracles is recognizing that there's really nothing neutral. There's nothing with a perfectly neutral valence, that ultimately everything is going to be based in love or based in fear, based in forgiveness or based in guilt. And this may sound overly simplistic, but it's not if you want to gain some clarity. And whether it's, you know, inherently true or not, I would say that the basis for evaluation consisting of considering carefully whether something is helpful or harmful is a valid analysis, right? But can you think of a better one? I mean, I can't think of a better one. Does this serve me or not serve me? Does this serve the greater good or not serve the greater good? Ah, well, there may be a possible point of debate. Well, this hurts me, but it's good for everyone else. Or this helps me, but it's bad for everyone else. You know, I spray some Roundup on my weeds on my lawn. Well, I'm fine, but it's going to make all the bunny rabbits mutate. So a period of sorting out, this marvelous opportunity with something like seven planets going through Virgo at the moment, the establishment of your priorities, the determination of what you care about, and then remembering your priorities and then using your priorities as a means of making your decisions. Now, speaking of other people, the other people angles of your chart are quite interesting right now, but nothing like they're going to be beginning in late 2020, when you begin a completely new phase of your life, because both Jupiter and Saturn are moving into your opposite sign, Aquarius, and they're going to form a conjunction on your seventh house cusp, the house of partnerships, relationships, and your environment. And so this is a way off. I mean, this conjunction is not until it's really five seasons away, because the conjunction takes place on December 21st, 2020. So it's like the first big thing that happens after the 2020 election. And all through 2020, we're living under the influence of this Capricorn conjunction, Saturn conjunct Pluto. I've written a blue streak about it. We will put some of the Saturn-Pluto articles up on the resources page so you can browse around and see what I've been writing about Saturn and Pluto, and perhaps what some of the other Planet Waves writers have been saying about it. But that conjunction, which is very much the one about your day-to-day life and your state of mind, your work environment, and the work you do, who you serve, transforms in the course of 2020 into a whole new story, which is the Saturn-Jupiter conjunction. Another one of these major conjunctions just happens a little more frequently than Saturn-Pluto. Saturn-Pluto happens 3 times a century. Jupiter-Saturn happens 5 times a century. So neither of these are everyday occurrences, and they're both happening in the same year. And they're both indicative of a radical transformation for you, a complete reorientation. And so one of the things you can think of the all this Capricorn astrology as being is a kind of like the demolition phase before the renovation phase, right? Certain point, someone's got to go in there with a sledgehammer and smash down the walls and, you know, make the open floor plan and whatever they might do, resurrect the fireplace that was hidden behind the T111 paneling. And that's what's going on now. And then comes this major new phase. Now, as part of the preparation of that major new phase, there are two major messages that, well, maybe three. Let's recall that the primary outer planet influence affecting your sign right now is Varuna. So this means conduct your relationships with a focus on egalitarian being, making sure that no one's really in second place, that responsibilities are distributed in a human and sane and compassionate way, and to evaluate your relationships based on the distribution of responsibilities and the distribution of power. And when you have the conversation about responsibilities and power, that you have it in a loving and civilized way. And so that you approach the question from a civilized standpoint, a compassionate standpoint, with as little charge as possible, and then see the response that you get and evaluate that. So you're going for a kind of a kind of objectivity, not that it's possible in any pure sense of the word, but not, for example, complaining or revolting. Just saying, what are we doing here? How are we going to, assess this? The reason I bring this up is, and I don't want this to like bias you against thinking that anyone's taking advantage of you, but they might be. Here's the condition that describes that. The eighth house in astrology is the mainline interface we have to others that we're intimate with. The seventh describes relationships and enmities and partnerships and things like that. But when it really gets down to business is the eighth house, the next house over. And this is where we share resources with other people. It is where we fully engage on the level of legacy, meaning, death, and dowry, sexual exchange, all the resources that are shared or exchanged in the relationship. You have Pisces on this house. Pisces is permeable. Pisces makes it easy for others to just kind of come in and take over. And in Pisces right now are two important factors. Neptune, the modern ruler of Pisces, it's one of the kind of accurate outer planet discoveries that describes Pisces. And it's in Pisces for a long haul stay. It's going to be another 7-8 years till Neptune makes its way into Aries. And I kind of don't want to think about that one, but now it's in Pisces. And that means that your already permeable interface with others, the place where the energy is really exchanged, right? Sex, death, surrender, money, all is under the influence of Neptune. This is something to be cautionary of. It is important that you know the facts and figures. It is important that you know what all the bank accounts contain, not just yours. It is important that you know the nature of every transaction. It is important that your partners be honest with you and willing to stand up for and demonstrate their honesty, that you they don't just simply expect you to assume that everything's on the up and up, that you grant one another access to a level of your lives, or can't really call it intimacy. So where there is intimacy, there's going to be transparency. There's going to be transparency of agenda, and there will be verifiability on the level of the facts and the figures. So pay attention to this. It is never appropriate, in my opinion, to go snooping unless under the most extreme circumstances. And so this really can be solved with a basic conversation. But also the place to really start is asking yourself what you may have withheld in the context of any relationship where sex and money are a question. And then look honestly at, you know, what people say and do. And ultimately, I believe you need to be able to just say, what's this about? Let's go over our accounts, both financial and spiritual. Let's understand the nature of our commitment to one another. What is that about? And I think with any of this kind of work, the place to begin is with yourself. Ask yourself the nature of your commitment. Check your own facts and figures. Pay attention to your own hunches about yourself and what you want. Eighth house Neptune transits can be a little insidious. I mean, all Neptune transits can be, but the eighth house has already a nebulous quality to it, because it's veiled in taboo, and you have Pisces there, which makes you inherently trusting. And it is this inherent trustingness that I suggest you regulate, that you have a protocol, a series of steps you take in your assessment of whether something or someone is true, fair, honest, real, and that be part of the process of building your prioritization and your personal spiritual integrity, that you are on a kind of extended journey to find. Things come out in time. Everything comes out in time. People tell you where they're coming from. If you listen carefully, they tell you where they're coming from. And so you want to be listening, especially right around now. And one thing that you can do is to understand the nature of your own attractions. Understand the nature of who and what draws you to them or draws them to you, and get a feeling for how that works and see the pattern. Neptune things are, they're often invisible until we, you know, put on the special glasses or, you know, enter the dream time in a certain way. And by the way, the dream time will be providing you with considerable information. The other thing to watch with this set of transits to your eighth is the way karma moves. What happens when you or someone takes an action, particularly within the context of an intimate relationship or partnership of the financial or sexual kind? Look at the results of actions taken. There is an instant karma quality that this house possesses in your life. And so the more you pay attention to just the basic things that are transacted, and you know, and what happens next, and what happens next. You know, rather than kind of hazing out and things kind of fall back into the ocean, follow the storyline for a while. Watch one wave come in from, you know, you can do that. It's kind of fun. I think one of my favorite things to do on the beach is to watch a wave forming a couple hundred feet out and then see it slowly work its way toward the shore and then crest and break. Follow those waves like a surfer. And as you follow those waves, you will eventually be able to ride those waves to a destination. And where Neptune is an influence, one of the most important things that you can do is to sort out your image that you have of someone or something from evidence of the reality of that someone or something, and then proceed to verify, to check yourself. Give the benefit of the doubt. It's always good in the first couple of rounds to give the benefit of the doubt, and that may turn out to be the exactly right position. But you want to check yourself as much as anyone else. And you want to be particularly careful in financial transactions and make sure that you don't have unusually high expectations of them. And I would highly suggest that as Jupiter works its way through the square to Neptune and into Capricorn, that you not speculate financially for a couple of months. And if you do, I mean, some people just kind of can't help themselves. They want to make that trade. Make sure that you are willing to lose what you speculate, which would mean hedging your bets, you know, gamble a third of what you've got or something like that, or a quarter or 20% or whatever it is, and know that you're speculating, because it's important to recognize that with Jupiter in Sagittarius in your fifth, that's like, well, I'm going to win. I'm definitely going to win. In Reno or Vegas or whatever, Monte Carlo. But then Neptune in the eighth is suggesting that there may be a question there. And as part of this question, you know, you want to be filtering all the new people in your life through the most important filter, which is experience, but also notice what happens early in any situation. Because so often the end is written in the beginning. And the information that you need is likely to come out very early on, though you may not notice it, and you may not trust it. So all in all, there's a lot of indications of self-evaluation, mapping out your role, understanding your priorities, and making sure that you take care of yourself, and in particular, honor this blind spot of making sure that the deep relationships that you're in work for everyone. That's really the standard. And working for everyone means working for you first, and then does that serve anyone? Or you may be aware this works perfectly well for someone else, and then where are you left? All right, that's what I have to say for now. If Leo is not your rising sign, please try to check out your rising sign. My readings work well for Sun and Rising in particular. This is because of my orientation on the houses. I'm using similar methods to both Patrick Walker and Linda Goodman, who are able to give very thorough readings. You read Linda Goodman, you wonder, how did she know all that? Well, she's working with all 12 signs. That's the key, is that you're made of the whole wheel from your special, distinctive point of view. All right, Sunshine, thank you for your thought and patience and most of all your trust, and I'll catch you on a different day. Bye for now.